Hey guys, welcome back to the Man Cave 4301 podcast. I'm your host, Big Kev. Thank you very much for tuning in. Just a quick reminder before we get into this podcast, go and see this on YouTube if you're not watching it on YouTube already. So you can find it over there. Don't forget to like, subscribe and share this video on whatever platform that you see fit. And get the word out there. The more people that we can get out there and the more stories, the more relatable stories that people can listen to, the better, so that they can draw off these experiences and possibly help themselves out with mental health, PTSD, anxiety, depression, and all that sort of stuff. So hit the share button, subscribe, follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Be muchly appreciated. I know I haven't been very active lately, but there has been a lot going on, so that's for another podcast. But as of now, let's get into this podcast. Today's guest joined the military in 1996 in the Ready Reserves until a scheme was canned by the Howard government. After a short stint out of the military, he went on to join the Air Force as an aircraft life support fitter in 2001. But with the aim to do his job to its full extent, he left the Air Force and joined the Army as a craftsman electrical engineer, where he fitted aircraft life support systems. He deployed to Timor, Qatar, Afghanistan, and is now a paramedic and has been for the past 10 years. He's also an author in his spare time. Keith McArdle, welcome to the podcast.
You're welcome, mate. Thanks for having me.
So usually we start off with, why did you join the military?
I basically joined the military for a bit of adventure. I'm very proud of my country. I'm a patriot of Australia. And so I thought it was just a stepping stone from high school. Finished high school in 95, sorry, and joined the Army in 96 as a 17-year-old. I was 17 for 6 months, and then in June I turned 18. So it was a steep learning curve.
Straight out of school.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been a rude wake-up call.
It was. But I enjoyed it, man. It was a good adventure.
What was the premise for doing that? Was it just that you didn't want to sit on your bum doing nothing and you just decided that Army was going to be it, or is it running the family?
Both my granddad served.
Yep.
They were British Army, so Granddad McArdle was in North Africa, Sicily, Italy, and Granddad McNeil was in the Air Force from memory, and he was a gunner on the anti-aircraft during the Blitz, trying to shoot down the Nazis.
Yep.
And then Great Uncle Bernard was a paratrooper, led to believe, jumped in over on the 6th of June. And yeah, so there's a bit of military history there in our family. Was that a pterodactyl?
There was a pterodactyl. Oh my God. That's embarrassing.
Oh, you're right, mate.
I'm not dead yet.
But there is someone beside you that is.
No. Go away. It's my podcast. Shit. Yeah, okay. So, was it with the reserves or the ready reserves when it was active? Was it the same sort of boot camp as everybody else went through, or was it sort of different because it was reserves? Because
it's exactly the same. So the ready reserve scheme stopped in 1996 when John Howard came in. But at that time, you did 3 months basic training. It was 13 weeks, 1 week pre-week, and then 12 weeks of training. And then you did your initial employment training. So I was infantry. So I went to, they actually did our IATs in Gallipoli Barracks in Brisbane rather than Singo. And our basic training was done in Pakapunyal instead of Kapuka, because in 96, Kapuka was being renovated and it was actually overcrowded. So they opened Pakapunyal up for the first time since Vietnam. That's where the Vietnam diggers used to do their basic training, which was another cool thing. I think we were the third or fourth platoon through since Vietnam. So that was a big thing for me anyway.
Yep.
And then you did 6 months in your corps. So I went to 49 RQR, Royal Queensland Regiment. We were allowed to finish our full-time year, and then our contracts were stopped by the government. So we were then normally would have done 4 years part-time at 49 RQR, but we were all dispersed back to our hometown unit. So I went to Mackay, which was 42 RQR from memory, and did a couple of years there as a reservist.
Yep.
And then discharged on request.
Being read a reserves, how often do you attend? You don't live on barracks?
So the way the Ready Reserve used to work is you do your full-time year and then you would do a massive exercise at Brisbane, 49 RQR, once a year. But once that contract was cut, you then go back to your units and you're parading every Tuesday night and then one weekend every month or so.
Okay.
So normal heroes, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. So when that finished up, what year was it that finished up?
99.
So
you mean the Ready Reserve scheme? Or
yeah, no, you. For the Ready Reserves.
99, yeah.
Yeah. So you're out of there, and where do you move on to next?
Well, I studied Diploma in Information Technology, and with a view to get into the information technology field. I did that for a couple of years. Worked for a company called Rostec up in Townsville, and they started to go into not quite liquidation, but not far off it. And I was starting to fire people left, right, and centre.
Yeah.
And I was going downhill very quickly, so I thought, I need to jump ship and fast because I don't want to be without a job. What do I know? I know the military, so I decided to just get back into what I know.
Yep.
But this time I joined the Air Force.
Yes.
2001. Don't hold that against me. And I wanted to join with as a trade as well. So I know as a grunter, you have a certain skill set, but it's not might not be a good skill set to have in civilian life. You might not pick up that many jobs.
I was going to ask, the job that you had with the IT stuff, was that were you trying to upskill for later on in the military, or was it just something that came through?
Just something that came through, man. Yeah. I just thought I'd jump on board and have a crack at that.
Did you ever think at that stage that you'd join the military again?
Oh, it was always something in the back of my mind, man. Even when I was studying, I just missed that military life.
A lot of people do, yeah.
Yeah. And, so I rejoined. The Air Force is an aircraft life support fitter. So they work with the air crew of the aircraft, and we work on anything that's going to preserve life if they crash or they're shot down, like life preserver yokes, Sekimar jackets, air crew helmets, that kind of stuff. So it's just scheduled servicing. It was a good job.
Yep.
But, yeah.
So how long were you there for?
I was in the Air Force for 4 years, from 2001 to 2005. And when I first joined, I made basically a promise to myself. I wanted to do the job for real, in a real environment. That was always my aim. 2004, we deployed to Qatar, which they call the MEAO, Middle Eastern Area of Operations. So you're in support of Iraq at that time. I'm only speaking for myself. I'm not speaking for any other RAFIs that may have deployed there. Full respect to you, girls and guys. But for me, myself, that wasn't a real environment. It was a bit of a holiday camp. Yes, it was challenging on a little bit on some days, but for the most part, it was just a great time, you know, for us anyway. The air crew was different. The air crew did fly into Iraq, were shot at, almost got shot down, lost one of the contractors. He got shot through the head as they were taking off. So
bloody hell.
Full dues to them. They copped it, but we on the ground didn't. And so my family had moved back to Mackay in 2005. So I thought, fuck it, we'll have to swear.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck it, I'll try and get to Townsville. And there was one leading aircraft position, RAFI position in the army up there. So I had a crack at that position and was lucky enough to gain that position. So I went to 5th Aviation Regiment. I started off in TSS, Tactical Support Squadron.
Yep.
As a RAFI. And the manor is basically the RAF equivalent of schema. So they're the ones who control your career, choose where you get deployed, where you get posted, sorry, where you get posted, not deployed. He said, I can guarantee you 12 months up there and then we'll just fuck you off somewhere else. And I thought, nah, I don't like that idea. So I just transferred to the Army as a craftsman in RAMEE, which is the Royal Australian Electrical Mechanical Engineers.
Yep.
And I stayed with them until 2009. And I have to say, this is probably going to step on some toes, but I honestly believe the Army do aviation better than the RAF.
Oh, wow.
They're more disciplined, they're more regimented, and I reckon they're better at what they do. Sorry if that pisses anyone off, but that's just my view, having worked with both.
It's your own experience, mate, so no one can take that away from you.
Yeah, yeah. 2006, deployed to East Timor, and that was a little bit more real. Not quite there, but a bit more on point. It was a bit more challenging. We had no running water, and we had no fresh food for the first month or so, so nothing on the guys who were there in 99. They were on rat packs the entire time. But
yeah.
We were only on rat packs for the first month or so. Then we had fresh rations come in. So that was good. It's not quite what I was looking for, though.
Right. So can you tell us a little bit about your experience for Timor? Because we've had a couple of guys on here from Timor, and they've actually been quite different roles. And it'd be interesting to get your take on what Timor was like with the environment, with the people that you were dealing with and all that sort of stuff. So are you able to just walk us through that deployment from sort of your transport over there, the information that you're sort of getting, your environment when you get there, and just sort of walk us through your time through Timor?
Yeah, man, no worries. So we were with the Black Eyes with B Squadron, 5th Aviation Regiment at the time. So we were working with the Black Hawks. We had four Black Hawks with us. And the first day we flew onto Manura, and that was harboured up outside Townsville and Townsville Port there. We slept on the ship that night and then woke up the next morning, and the OC thought, what the fuck are we doing? Let's just wait until I start sailing and then we'll land on the ship and go from there. So everyone go back, you got local leave, go home, see your families. Cool, no worries. Thanks, sir. So off we go, see our families for 2 days, I think it was. And then we got the recall, come back to base, got on the choppers. By that point, the ships were just north of Cairns. Manura was, but there was a couple of other ships with her. Refueled at Cairns, got back on the choppers and flew on board. And the Black Handers then folded the rotors back, which you can do with the Black Hawks, and parked them up one beside the other inside the frigate. Took us 4 days to get to East Timor. I could not wait to get the fuck off that boat.
Oh, not a good sailor.
I just cramped, man. Like, we had
okay.
two toilets and a shower for 100 people in the mess. They call it a mess, a troops mess. And it just wasn't real good, eh? And yeah, we kept calling the boat because it pissed the pussies off. But got off, and I flew in on one of the Black Hawks, which was really cool, man. You could see it's not cool for the people of East Timor, I suppose. You could see where there was smoke from some of the riots.
Yep.
The other fellas got on a landing craft, and they landed on the... I think it was the northern side of Dili, and then pack marched in. So we were based at the airfield in Dili. Comoro Airfield, I think, from memory. And when we landed, there was commandos and infantry had already secured the airfield. They'd done that days before. When 2006, in May, I think, there were about 10 commandos on the ground. And they were fronting up against huge gangs of pro-Indonesian Timorese. And eventually they said, we need backup now. And that's when the Australian government put the ADF back in again for the second time since 99.
Yep. Let's see, it wasn't so much the weapons and stuff that they were using. It was more the numbers. Yeah. You know, they were quite privy to our rules of engagement and all that sort of stuff. So, they just use large numbers, sticks and stones. And
basically, they were armed. They did have dart and bows and arrows and weapons with fuses and rudimentary shit. It was the numbers game that, that was the thing,
Yeah, okay. Well, were you sort of out and about, or were you just at the airfield doing repairs or any all that sort of stuff?
We're at the airfield mainly. I got on a couple of flights and went up into the mountains to help offload food to the kids and the families up there, which was freaking awesome, man.
Yep. That's that'd be very rewarding.
It was, and they were so happy to see us, eh?
Yeah.
I think they felt a bit more secure knowing that it was a military presence there that was on their side.
Yeah.
And willing to protect them if something kicked off. But for the most part, I was on at the airfield, just doing scheduled maintenance and stuff. Yeah.
Awesome, man. So not a bad time in Timor for you, which is good. You leave there when?
August 2006. So I got there in May 2006, left in August 2006.
Now, were you still in the RAF then, or was this when you transferred over to the military?
I was in the
Army.
I was a craftsman, which is equivalent to a private P.
Okay. So, filling in your time, what sort of stuff do you get up to with your before you get to Afghanistan?
Just back to same shit, different day, just normal stuff. And then I got a posting to C Squadron in 5th Aviation Regiment, and they call it C Regiment because they're a bit... they seem to be a bit exclusive. I don't know if they still are, but they were at that time. So got to C Squadron, and they're the Chinooks. And that was my end game. That's where I wanted to end up. And a great bunch of people, man. I really enjoyed that posting. So we deployed to Afghanistan in 2008, in February of 2008. We landed in Darwin. Some of the SAS boys got on, and then we flew over. And we dropped them off at TK first. And as we were doing a corkscrew landing in, I thought, this is a bit more like it. This is what I'm after.
Yep.
Offloaded those fellas, and then we flew to Kandahar Airfield.
Yeah, nice. Okay. Yeah. Tell us about the environment. What's your take on the environment over Afghanistan and the sort of people that you're dealing with? Did you get to see much of the... the population, or were you sort of behind the scenes a little bit?
Most of the time, I was behind the scenes. They had a market that came in once a week, and they were the locals that came in. There's a couple of security threats, allegedly, where some of the marketeers had stolen identification tags from other people, and they thought they might have been Taliban. But they were really nice people, friendly for the most part. Some of them were a bit, how's your father?
A bit on edge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only dealings I had. I didn't go outside the wire, and my hat's off to the infantry and SF boys who did. Like, fucking hell, they did some hard work out of there. So initially we were in ATCO demountable buildings when we first arrived. And the Taliban had hit us with rockets and mortars two or three times a week. It was indirect fire, and it was delayed trigger. So whenever we got hit, the Yanks would send up Predators, which is a unmanned aircraft, to have a squiz and just see if they could see the firing point and then fire on any enemy they saw. So the Taliban were quick to pick up on using delayed fuses so that they could set the fuse and then walk away. And then once the detonation happened and the aircraft went up, they were long gone. So what they do is they get a PVC pipe, 100 mil or something like that, cut it down the center lengthwise, and that was basically their rudimentary barrel. So they'd lay the 107 mil rocket into that, aim it towards the base where they wanted to hit, get their elevation kind of right, set the fuse, and then use something like a cigarette and lay that.
Oh, wow. Fuse.
Yeah, so that was a delay timer. Rudimentary, but fuck, it works.
Gee, that's insane, isn't it? I was actually listening to a podcast where a firefighter was starting fires with cigarettes and matches. He'd taped three matches down the bottom of a cigarette and he'd light it. Obviously, it'd burn down and then light the matches. Yeah, well, that's exactly the same. Like, yeah, that's incredible.
That's effective, eh?
Yeah, I mean, they might not look smart, but they've got some ingenuity up their sleeve, that's for sure. And unfortunately, sometimes it's quite effective. So,
it is, yeah.
What sort of goes through your mind when you've got bloody things exploding around you for the first time?
Well, the first time I wasn't scared at all. And that wasn't because I'm some fucking hero. It was because I've never been fired at before and I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
So we were in our donga at the airfield there. It was the two of us, me and my boss. And I heard what I thought sounded like a truck brake. You know, right at the end, just before the truck stopped.
Oh, like the air brake.
Yeah,
right, okay.
That's what I heard. And I thought, oh, it's a truck outside. What the fuck do they want? And Paddo, who'd been over multiple times to Afghanistan, said, he just looked at me and said, that's a rocket. And I went, what?
a fucking rocket.
And then we heard the boom. And then the early warning system
went. Oh, so the hiss, was it taking off?
No, it was going over our head.
Oi.
And then exploded on the airfield. Yeah, and then I felt fear, and I thought, oh, shit, this is for real.
Yep.
And, yeah. So, yeah, so we got hit a few times, eh? And there was some close calls. A couple of rotations before mine, one of the lasses got fragged from memory. The rocket landed near her hut, and she got some fragmentation to her face. And I think, had she not been bending over to tie her shoelaces, she would have died with the frags went over. Most of the frag went over her head. But yeah, some close calls on air rotation as well. We were setting up a Chinook for a mission, and I'll reverse slightly. That day, the Taliban had attacked Kandahar City, which is about 10 Ks from the airbase. They had released about 400 Taliban prisoners who said they were going to overrun the airfield. They're going to have a crack at it. They knew that if they hit us with rockets, we took cover in bunkers.
Right.
So their idea was to hit us with rockets relentlessly and then try and have a crack at the base.
So when you're all hiding away, then they'd just overrun it.
Yeah. So that night we were preparing a mission and we got struck a few times. But I think a Yankee infantry or SF patrol went out and had a bit of a quiet talk to a group of Taliban and killed them. But the others fired rockets in. One of them ricocheted off the concrete just fore of our Chinook helicopter, but failed to detonate, like fuck. And we got hit about four or five times that night from memory. But nothing, there was no attack. No, they didn't have the balls to come and have a crack, but that was an interesting night.
Was that the most interesting night?
I reckon it was, yeah.
Because it sounds pretty bloody interesting to me. I couldn't imagine, you know, knowing that there's somebody out there that wants to kill you. Like, it's insane. It just blows my mind that you can sit through that and, like, comfortably.
Like, yeah, they're their mentality is just, it's just something else, mate, eh? It's just pure hatred, I suppose.
Pure
fucking hatred.
Yeah. And, like, I've always been a firm believer that hate is taught. Like, I think at the core of a human, you're good. You know, compassionate, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And hate is bred into people.
Totally
so
agree, yeah.
So I don't know why there's just so much hate over there. I don't get it. If it's all because of one book, no idea. But
just all ideology, hey, and they can knock these fellas over. Like they got al-Baghdadi recently and they got bin Laden, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But it's not killing one bloke's not fixing the problem either. I don't know. I honestly don't know what the answer is.
You can't cut the head off this snake because, you know, it's just because you invented it, it doesn't mean that it's going to stop at you. You know, especially when you've got so many followers that believe the same thing. Like, it's just, I can't see this ending anytime soon. Like, I mean, it's definitely died down, but it's definitely not going to leave us anytime soon, which is a shame. So,
yeah, I think we still have a presence, a small presence in Afghanistan, but not huge. And I honestly don't believe it's. This is my opinion only. I don't believe it's a war that can be won.
No. Because I mean, you're fighting a nation. You know, like you're fighting so many people that are being recruited as well, like day after day. They just keep recruiting people. And I think as long as people are being born over there, they're not going to have a short of it. So,
and like I said, it comes down to the ideology. So they teach those kids young.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow.
So that was good. That was what I was after, man. That was the crux of my career. I wanted to do my job for real, and I got to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Freaking cool.
So, what the hell do you do in your downtime?
Oh, it's pretty shellax, man. Eh.
Yeah.
So they had the computer geeks had set up satellite connections, so you had internet.
Yep.
I had a laptop with me, so you could browse the internet, send emails home, just chillax, watch TV.
Oh, that's good.
It was really good, man. Eh?
Yeah, cool.
It was a good deployment.
What the hell?
They fucked off the ATCO huts about halfway through our deployment, and they built big concrete bunkers. Not bunkers, but like three-story accommodation, and it was rocket proof, apparently.
The quotation marks that you use there. You didn't put your faith completely into those things, did you?
I think if a 107mm rocket struck the building and detonated, I'm not sure it would be rocket proof, but
we'll say rocket resistant up to 2,000 meters. Yeah.
It was never put to the test, so I think fuck that.
Yeah, yeah. What do you do to entertain yourself?
You read, watch TV, jump on the net, go for a run, go to the gym. There was a couple of gyms. There was a British gym and there was an American gym. And I swear these fucking cleaners, I swear they did it deliberately, but you get on the treadmill and you go for a run and they'd come, their idea of cleaning the floor, because it was an open gym, so it was just open to the elements.
Yeah.
They come in and they start sweeping the floor. Fucking dust everywhere. So they thought, oh, here's a water bottle. We'll just pour some water on the floor just to dampen the dust, which didn't work at all. And although they kept a straight face, I'm fucking sure they did it deliberately, eh? So you're running. It's fucking dust and
choking
shit.
On dust. Why? I don't even know why they would fucking sweep it. I mean, it's just gonna...
No, oh, I don't know.
It sounds pointless to me.
I thought it was funny. but yeah, it's all those sort of different things. Go for a walk around the base as well. You could go for a walk around there.
Yep. Oh, that's cool. Any what kind of fuckery did you get up to?
Oh, we didn't get up to too much, eh?
Was it pretty strict, was it?
It was fairly strict to start with. Like, after 7 p.m. you had to wear your... If you went outside, if you're in your barrack block, fine, no dramas. If you're outside, you need to wear your helmet, body armour, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
A lot of us, after the first couple of months where you stop doing that, you just get blasé, man, eh?
Right.
And it's amazing what the mind can get blasé to. So when we rotated out, the next rotation came in about a week before we left for handover, changeover. And we got hit by a rocket, and we were in the entertainment area, just watching TV, watching a movie, hit by a rocket. So we all filed out with our like singlets, thongs, bumbling off to our accommodation block to do a roll call. And there's fucking these blokes in their helmets and armor on the ground, leopard crawling around, screaming, take cover. Dude, what are you doing? Like, just, it's all good.
Were they new guys?
Yeah, they were brand new guys. So, like, it. if a rocket lands next to you, all your body armor is going to do is keep your torso in one piece. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
So you become blasé to it, eh?
Well, you would. And that's with everything. You get complacent.
Complacent is probably a good...
So you leave Afghanistan when?
We've been June 2008. Yeah, so February to June.
Can you remember a time throughout your military service that weighed heavy on you?
Emotionally
and physically, it can be either, but it seems that you had a fairly smooth sort of military career, but was there anything there that really affected you at all?
In Afghanistan, we had ramp ceremonies. So have you heard of those before?
No, I haven't. And it would be nice if you could explain that for me and the listeners.
So a ramp ceremony is when deceased soldiers are sent home. So the C-130 is parked up on their runway, the ramp's down, and they're carrying the coffin or coffins on board. So there were ramp ceremonies in Afghanistan probably once, sometimes twice a week, for dead soldiers, and we were encouraged to go down and attend them, which I did as often as I possibly could.
That was
emotional. A lot of them were Canadians. The Canadians got smacked pretty hard.
Oh, wow.
When we were there, yeah.
So not just for Australian troops, it's for everyone.
Everyone. Americans, Canadians.
Okay. Yeah.
Thankfully, I didn't do any Aussie ones at Kandahar, but there were a couple of Aussies killed up in TK when we were deployed there. That was upsetting for everyone, I think, just to know that it was an Australian. Oh,
absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean... And it's not to disregard the others. It's just that it's a lot closer to home for you. You didn't know anybody that had been put on one of those planes, did you?
No, not personally.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I can't imagine what it'd be like to attend one of those. Well, multiple ceremonies like that. It must beat you down a bit and sort of affect your morale as well.
Yeah, it did, but it's, yeah, it was emotionally powerful.
Emotionally draining?
Draining, but also it sort of felt like you'd done something as well in turning up and showing your respect.
Yeah, absolutely.
To that soldier.
Yep.
It was.
Doing your part and paying your respects for their sacrifice so that you didn't have to.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, which is powerful stuff. Appreciate that. So, when you get out, where are you going?
Okay, so I discharged on request in February 2009. I'd done what I wanted to do. I did my job for real, and that was my main goal. My wife's family had moved down to Maryborough in Queensland, so we thought we'd shift down there with them, and I had done work experience with the ambulance in year 10 as a kid, and I enjoyed it, so I thought I'll have a crack at that. Excuse me. So I was lucky enough to get in as a paramedic. And in those days, in 2009, you did your training. It was a diploma, and you did 2.5 years on-road job experience as you were studying.
Yep.
And I'm still a paramedic now. I love the job, and... Yeah, it's a great job, man.
Yep. So how many years is that? It's...
10 years.
10 years. Yeah, wow. Yeah, well, I actually had to call out an ambulance. Time flies, sorry?
Time flies, eh? Jesus.
Oh, don't even. Oh, I sat down on the couch today and my knees hurt, and I was just like, I'm sitting down and it hurts. No.
Oh,
I'm getting old.
Only to be 21 again.
Yeah, that's probably how I ruined my knees. Fuck 21. Fuck you in the ass. I actually had to call an ambulance the other night at work. We had this kid in...
Cracked a fingernail?
Sorry?
Cracked a fingernail?
No. Oh. It's something a little bit worse. But he got a little animated with a Coke machine. Something upset him and he decided that he had king hit this fucking Coke machine, busted his knuckles up, and he's like walking around doing that, like this, you know, are you okay, mate? And he goes, yeah. And I said,
yeah, I'm tough.
I said, give a look at your knuckles, dude. And I looked at it, it's all swollen up to shit, bruised. And I was just like, you're right, man. And I said, do you need assistance? And he goes, yeah, I probably need some assistance. I was like, all right.
And my mum.
Yeah. So I called the ambulance for him. They come and sort him out.
No, oh, good on you, man.
It was good
probably
times.
Probably fractured something in there.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, look,
what happens when you hit something? Like,
yeah. The Coke machine was not phased.
And the brick wall's not phased.
No.
The glass window's not fucking phased.
No, it's ridiculous, mate. Yeah, it was funny to watch, but just, you know, that's what you do when you're a teenager. You just punch shit mindlessly.
Yeah.
So I can't say I haven't done it before. I haven't busted myself up as bad as that, though. So when you start your training to be an AMBO, walk us through that. What's the training? It's pretty intense.
It is. I found it a real challenge, actually, especially coming from a non-medical background.
Right.
Some of the people who I was with had been or were still nurses. They had good medical knowledge. Medical terminology was down pat before they even started.
Mm.
And here's me, a baggy-assed ex-digger, wondering, what the fuck have I done? And so, so what you do is you do 6 weeks down in Brisbane initially, which is very intensive training. And then you start your 2.5 years on-road diploma, which can be challenging at times, but I really enjoyed it as well. I had good mentors for the most part.
Yep.
And exposure to good jobs, to all sorts of different jobs, all the way from cracked fingernails to splinters to road trauma, significant trauma, cardiac arrests.
How do you deal with your first major incident? Like, is it just game on, just watching, soaking it all in? Because you've got that disconnect there. You've got something major happening, but you know right now I have to learn what's going on. So you've got a lot of conflicting emotions. How do you just into it, do the job, and just learn as much as you can?
Yeah, that shit comes after. Initially, when the job's on, it's game face. You go back to your systems, and you work.
Is this the same with your training? Like your first sort of major incident? Like it was that way? Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Obviously, it's new. You haven't experienced this sort of stuff before, but you still got your game face on. And you're disconnected from yourself personally.
Yep.
And you're just doing your job.
Yep.
That's how I experienced it anyway. And then your reflection comes after that. So the first significant job I had was a cardiac arrest of a 42-year-old female, which means where their heart stops.
Hmm.
So we worked on her for 2 hours, but she ended up passing away. I will never forget that's burned into my mind. But not in a bad way. It's just a memory. I don't sleep at night or have bad dreams or anything. It's just something that's there. Everything else after that just becomes a blur, basically.
Can you remember how you dealt with it afterwards? Did they do a bit of a debrief with you and talk about it and explain a lot of things, and did they answer a lot of questions that were going through your head? All that sort of stuff.
More often than not, if there's time permitting, you'll do on a big job. You'll do a debrief. So you'll sit around together. You'll talk about what was done well, what wasn't done, what was done but could have been done a little bit better. And that itself, just talking about the professional part of the job, helps emotionally, if that makes sense.
Yep.
For me anyway.
Does it make you understand that these things happen and we don't have any control over it? Sometimes we just can't win, you know, like can't win every time. So
that's something that you need to be very cognizant of going into this job, is the fact that number one, everyone dies.
Yep.
And if someone dies, number one, it's not your fault. Number two, you did every possible thing you could to help them, and move on, basically. I think some people have personalized that experience, and personalizing that experience takes on the family's emotion, the family's grief, and that's a fucking slippery slope, mate, eh?
Yeah, so I think, like I was saying before, I mean, as human beings, we're supposed to be compassionate, and we're wired that way. We're wired to be compassionate, and it really blows my mind how we expect people like yourself to just strip themselves of those emotions in order to help us. Like, it's just it blows my mind. It really does.
I think the reason we do that is not selfish. It's purely selfish. It's not for compassion. It's not for the other people. It's to protect our own.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sounds a bit harsh, but.
No. But we still ask you to do that for your health when we need you the most, you know, like to help us out. And I just got such high respect for people that do this job, because, you know, I don't know how I would react, but I mean, it's all in the training, I suppose. Not everyone gets through as well. So
No, not everyone.
You know, is there a certain sort of person that they look for in regards to recruiting? Do you think there's any psychology against it?
I don't know. They did a psychometric test initially. I don't know who or what they were looking for, but I must have slipped through the cracks.
Because for anyone that doesn't know, he doesn't have a heart. No, it's well, I mean, you do a lot of places do psychometrics. Police do it. I would say the fire department do it. They're obviously after a certain breed of person that that they're looking for. So to be able to,
I guess they're looking for. I can't speak for them. I wouldn't have a fucking clue. But I imagine that they're looking for someone who has emotional or mental and or mental robustness.
And
deal with certain situations and not provide a service to the community without detriment, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I'd imagine anyway.
Someone level-headed. Cool, man. So what, with your 10 years, what sticks out the most for you in 10 years of being a paramedic? I mean, it's got to be some harrowing stuff out there.
Yeah, I've seen a fair bit of shit, eh?
Yeah.
A bit of blood and guts. A lot of our work, though, is what we call subacute. So it's coughs, colds, sore holes. That's the mainstay of our work. That's people who say, this is the thing that pisses me off about this job, is people who spew one time and instead of waiting, drinking some fluid, trying some ginger, going to the chemist, trying to help themselves, going to a GP for fuck's sake. Not their first point of call is calling the ambulance, and we haul them off to emergency department, and they're taking a resource away from the community when someone who genuinely needs an ambulance, and they may not be getting one because of some numpty who can't look after themselves. That's what pisses me off. That's one thing after 10 years of ambulance that's grinds my gears a bit, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, when I was dealing with this guy on the weekend, it annoyed me that I had to call an ambulance for him for his stupidity.
Oh, no, but he probably would have fractured something in his hand as well.
That's right. And it's not that I didn't want to call the ambulance. It's just that this happened. Why do I have to waste these resources on some idiot that can't control themselves? You know, like, I was genuinely worried about his welfare. Like, I mean, it was busted up pretty bad. And I'm like, I'm a compassionate person. Like, I asked him, you know, do you need help? Oh, I'll get you help if you need it. Like, you're busted up pretty bad. And
was he pissed?
No. He was just a kid.
Oh,
he was just a kid, like, just venting. And, you
done
know.
That before. But we can provide him pain relief. And like I said, he's probably got something fractured in there. That's a genuine ambo job, man.
Yeah. Just the annoyance of having to call one because of someone's stupidity is pretty much it. Yeah. But no, every time I have called the ambo, I'm a security guard, so every time I have called an ambulance, I've always been so calm, like just amazing people, just like, hey, how you going? Just really laid back sounding, like, hey, how you going? What's happened? You know, they just get the information and they're just cool as cucumbers, man. And it's really impressive. And I've actually watched them and I take it on board. And when this kid busted himself up, I wasn't like, oh, man, look at that. Look what you've done, you dickhead. You know, like, no, I was just like, hey, dude, that looks pretty bad. Do you want me to call you some help? And just being able to keep that situation, like, nice and calm. And because if I guarantee you, if I had said, if I was a little bit animated myself about the whole situation, he would have been, nah, I'll be right, blah, blah, blah. And he never ended up going to the hospital anyway. Like, they checked him out in the ambulance and he said, no, I don't want to go to the hospital. So, I mean, they can't keep him, so they had to let him go. And he just got on a bus with his mates and left. But, it was it took a couple of hours out of my time, so made my night go quicker.
But keeping you cool has such an effect, man. Like you said, he probably would have arced up more if you hadn't have kept you cool.
Yeah.
Like, if you've got a sick kid and you're cool and calm and collected, that helps the child. But more importantly, it helps the parents who are there. They calm down.
Oh, no, he was with mates, like the regular hangouts. Like, they just hang around, cause issues. But, it's just troubled kids. And that in itself, it gives me the shits, but I understand where they're coming from. They're like, what's their home life like? Like, I keep all that stuff in consideration because you just don't know what these kids are going through, you know? So, because I'd hate for my kids to be in that situation and no one give a shit, you know? Not that they ever would be, but yeah, no. But I've also flowed that on to people that are angry as well. Like, I deal with a lot of people that are aggravated. And I just find that keeping calm and, out of all the bullshit that I've had to put up with, I've never been in a physical altercation yet because I've been able to talk my way out of it and reason with them and all that sort of stuff. So, and I've dealt with some pretty scary people. So, it's just watching and learning and Ambo's got a lot to do with that because he's just so calm and cool. Like, I love it. It's great. Yeah.
Oh, that's good, man.
Yeah. So you're teaching me.
Well, grasshopper. Nah, it's been good, man.
What kind of support do they offer you guys in the event of something big?
There's two things they got. They got peer support, which is they're trained ambulance officers. They had some psychological training. And when you go to a big job, you're put on a list for the person in your area and they ring you up and say, you know, are you okay? You need to talk. And then you also have trained psychologists available if you need to go and see them. So there's some good support there.
Mm.
And as far as the military is concerned, I only just got my white card about a month ago. It took me 10 years to get out of the system, and I thought, fuck, yeah, all right, I'll apply. And, yeah, but that, you get free mental health with that as well, with the white card.
Yeah, yep. Through DVA?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's cool. So you reached out to me to give your take on your story. What's the message that you want to get out there?
Well, the main reason, this is purely selfish, the main reason I reached out to you was to talk about some of the books I've written.
Okay.
So my main storyline, as far as military is concerned, was Invasion Australia by Indonesia. And I wrote that in 2012, when Indonesia was a bit more mainstay than they are now, before China came onto the scene. And it's basically about a group of everyday Australians struggling to survive once Indonesia provides a successful invasion. And I thought they couldn't just walk in. Like, I thought, how would they do it realistically? They don't have the capability to do it realistically at the moment, but in the fiction world, I got them to land aircraft in every major airport in Australia, offload troops, and just start blatting the place up. And that sent our anti-terrorist capability into overdrive, and all of our attention was inbound inside Australia, looking at all our airports. And then in places like Mackay off Hay Point, which is a big coal terminal, at any one time there could be 10, 12 coal ships waiting in line, anchored offline, waiting to fill up with coal. So if I had a few of those, which look like civilian coal tankers full of Indonesian military hardware, waiting for the airports to be taken and then move in and offload to non-military areas like Mackay and get a footprint inside Australia and then start flying in, that might be a viable way to start an invasion. So that's what I did. And so the ADF gets smashed as a cohesive fighting force, and it's up to everyday Australians. And that's what the storyline's about.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it, eh?
Yeah.
it keeps me kind of sane.
keeps your brain working.
Yeah, that's it.
Yep. And where can people get that?
You can get it on Amazon. Or any bookshop. If you want the paperback, you can order it in from any of the bookshops.
Yep.
And I've got a few here if anyone wanted to contact me through Facebook or my website or whatever. But nowadays, Indonesia is just a backstory, man. Like, China has taken over.
Mm.
So they were
scary stuff.
Yeah. Have you heard about what they're doing at Vanuatu?
No.
This is going to scare the shit out of you. They use a thing called debt trap diplomacy. So what they do is, this is what they've done in Vanuatu. They approach Vanuatu and they say, look, it's an amazing island. I think you could do amazingly with your tourism. How about we build a port for you, big enough to service any of the cruise liners in the world, and you can have all these tourists.
Or our military ships.
Well, so they've done that, and Vanuatu can no longer pay the debt back. So China has said, okay, fair enough. How about this? Don't worry about the debt. No more to pay. But we lease the port off you for 99 years. What do you reckon? And their hands are tied. So that port is now being leased by China. And the water off the port's 25 metres deep.
So they're leasing it for the cost of what they owe.
Yep.
So it's free.
Yep. So that port, that port's deep enough to service any of the cruise liners, biggest cruise liners in the world. But conversely, it's also big enough to service two carrier strike routes.
Bloody if they wanted. Hell.
And that's on our fucking doorstep. So then they move to Tonga, and they do a similar thing with Tonga, and they do a similar thing to the Solomon Islands. So if you look on a map, Australia is here, and if you draw a line between Vanuatu, Tonga, and Solomon Islands, it forms a line like that.
Oy.
So they're basically cutting us off from America, which is up here, it's to our northeast. So they've cut our supply line off to our greatest military ally. And they've done the same thing in a port much closer to Australia. Have you heard about that?
No. Do I want to know? Am I moving back to New Zealand?
have a guess which fucking port, mate.
No.
Port Darwin. I secured that in 2015. And it's currently leased by the Chinese for the next 94 years. So they have shown no military threat to Australia. So ASIO did a, before the sale went ahead, the lease went ahead, ASIO did a threat assessment and said, look, it's owned, the company Landbridge is owned by a fella called Yi Cheng. They said Yi Cheng has no affiliation with the Chinese Communist Party.
Sure.
So it's fine. There's no threat to Australia. Whew, that was a close one, Ellis. Thank fuck for that. But if you jump on the internet, anyone, and you look up Landbridge, Yi Cheng, it's not hard to see that one of their main business parties is the Chinese Petroleum Company, National Petroleum Company or something. And they are affiliated with the Communist Party. So he is affiliated with the Communist Party, you morons. Where the fuck were you looking, ASIO? Wasn't Landbridge.
Fucking hell.
But yeah, so it's...
It's a joke.
It is. So they have a foothold straight to Australia, if they so choose.
Yeah, wow.
So, but yeah, China's no longer a developing country. They have arrived front and centre. Problem is, they didn't arrive with a song and a dance or an explosion. They arrived like a fucking assassin, mate.
Mm. Yeah, wow. That's crazy stuff, man.
Fuck yeah.
It's scary stuff.
But the Yanks were smart enough to spot it before we did. And they've got, they've got a fucking marine base off Darwin. But it's only Marine Force Rotation Darwin or some shit. But they're only there 6 months of the year. They're only there in the dry season. So for 6 months, there's no US element there at all. So we are, having served almost a decade in the Australian military, full-time anyway, we're very good at what we do. I've trained with and worked alongside other countries, and I can say that Australia is one of the best militaries in the world.
I think it was actually said by Sean Barry when he was on that we have a small force, but it's a highly trained one.
That's the thing. So yeah. We're very, very highly trained, very highly skilled. We're fucking exceptional at what we do.
Yep.
But we're small.
Yeah.
So we would get steamrolled, you know, especially the size of Australia, you know, we, yeah. But yeah, no, so it's scary, but.
Yeah, and look, I mean, there's probably going to be people out there that go, oh, fucking, here we go, conspiracy shit. And I'm just like, yeah, you know, when you look at it closer, shit just doesn't add up, you know, like.
But see, the thing is, conspiracy theorists are things, it's a theory, something that hasn't happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But when people start laying out facts and stuff like this, yeah, people tend to go on that conspiracy route and say, oh, yeah, like, really, they're going to take over? I mean, they're just doing what they do. And people are just going to be complacent about it. But
they haven't shown any military threat to us, but that's not to say they won't ever. Like,
well... Like you said, assassins don't let you know they're coming.
No, that's right, man. And if they decided to have a crack, then at least their ducks are in a row.
Mm. They're literally in a bloody row and cutting off your supply chain.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I'm not saying they ever would, but yeah, no. It's possible. Possibility.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a scary thought, you know, and if it looks like a duck and it sounds like a duck, you know, so you know, and I'm probably part of the population that's complacent about that. You know, I don't read up on all that sort of stuff, and I'm glad that someone does, because I just don't have the time or the bandwidth to deal with that sort of stuff. So yeah,
it's fucking interesting. Well, if you jump on Google Earth, have you ever jumped on Google Earth before?
Yeah,
you see. You've got that rollback feature where you can go back through the years and then see what the satellite imagery looked like.
Oh, no, not that advanced on it.
Yeah, yeah, there's a little rollback feature on there. So if you go and have a squiz at Port Darwin, there's a place called Wickham.
Right.
Just northeast of Wickham, there's a little spit of land that goes out to Timor Sea, I think it is. And in 2012, that was just scrub, just forest. And you roll forward to 2019, and it's a mini industrial city with a little jetty coming off it.
Yeah, wow.
So the Chinese have been, I'm assuming it's funded by the Chinese, but they've been busy.
But the Chinese have also got these little islands that they've made plastered around the joint, don't they?
South China Sea, yeah. They've been contended by Malaysia, the Philippines. It's east of Vietnam as well. So they've all got dibs on that area, and China's gone out. So they've sailed out south from Hong Kong, and there's atolls that are already there, and they've just dumped fucking sand and soil on top of the atolls to build these islands. Further south is a little reef called Mischief Reef or something like that. And that's to our north. It's near Indonesia. And on that reef, they have capability to land fighter bombers. They have artillery. So it's essentially a stepping off point.
Yeah, wow.
If they needed to, yeah.
Yeah. Now, that is scary stuff, isn't it?
It's fucking interesting, eh?
It is very interesting. It's fascinating. It really is. And like I said, there's going to be people out there who are like, yeah, whatever. But this stuff generally really excites me. Like, but I just don't read into it. Like, I don't know why. I guess I did get caught up in a few conspiracy theories. I think it just took too much of my time. And made me an angry person. I was literally just angry at everything, eh? And every time I saw something, like, I'd be subscribed to all this shit on YouTube, and then anytime something popped up, I'd just be like, ugh, fuck this, and fuck that.
and fuck you, and
all this other stuff. And I caught myself out one day, and I was just like, this shit is making me fucking angry as shit. So I just went delete. It's like, fuck it, I can't deal with this sort of shit anymore. I'm just too negative, like, and that's just not me. Like, yeah, it was just fucking me up. So I just tend to do my own thing and not worry about anything outside, you know, like, it's not crazy, so.
Yeah, well, I just find it interesting.
It is fascinating. It fascinates the shit out of me. I just get angry.
Yeah. Total respect to China, though. Like, they're doing an amazing job.
Yeah.
Of their own national interests. Unfortunately, we're helping them. That's the only problem.
We're helping the assassins. It's like, we're giving them our location, you know, GPS location.
Yeah, yeah. Go, mate. You're doing a good job there, mate. I shouldn't get into politics.
No, politics was another thing. Like, it just fucking made me so angry. Because none of the cunts are doing anything for us. Like, they only line their pockets and they go, oh, fuck, my term's up. Oh, well. Oh, shit. Oh, I got kicked out. Oh, just stabbed me in the back. Yeah. I'll still get me fucking pension. Go get fucked. You know?
Exactly right,
Jesus man. Christ. It's almost like they were just trying to pump each other through just so they could get their pensions and set themselves up. Like, they probably go and drink at the same fucking pub on the weekend, you know, and socialise and be like, hey, this is what we should do, right? You get in as Prime Minister, I'll come and fucking stab you in the back, right? You get your pension, you fuck off, and then I get mine, and then we'll do the same, you know? And it's just like, how many fucking politicians did we go through in a matter of 4 years? Like fucking six or some shit?
Oh,
it's bullshit. Absolute bullshit. So I got no respect for fucking politicians. They're lower than the dirt on my boots.
Some of them have like their companies off to the side that they use for subcontracts. I will use this company to build this road, and no one needs to know that I own it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Ah, fuck.
Anyway, fuck them.
Yeah, fuck. Look what you've done.
Sorry, mate.
No, that's all good. So, how many more books have you got? Are you writing another one, or?
Yeah, so there's three books in, I call it the Unforeseen series, which is Indonesia's invasion. I probably should change it to China, but anyway. So three books in that series. I've got a standalone called Tour de Midgard, which is about an Australian Special Air Service patrol in Iraq who accidentally set off a time portal and end up in 10th century Denmark.
Ooh, a bit of sci-fi.
Yeah, so they're working with the Vikings and they're trying to get back to their home life and their families and stuff. And they run out of ammo and they learn how to fight with sword and shields. Some of them not very well. And
That's cool.
It's just a romp, isn't it?
It's like getting these highly trained military guys to go back to sticks and stones. It's that's pretty cool. I like that.
I had a shitload of fun with that one. And a couple of short stories in there. And then I started a new fantasy series called The Ironstone Saga. And it's about an assassin, but he's not Chinese. and he dies inside the first fucking chapter. And so what I do is, like, to save his life, one of his friends, his main friends, gets a witch, basically, to imbue a nature spirit onto his spirit and force him back into his body. So he comes back to life, but he's sort of a zombie kind of...
Jon Snow.
Yeah. Problem is that the nature spirit hates all humans, and he has one mission, that's to kill everyone.
Oh, shit. just one small flaw. Did you read the fine print?
Oh, no, I fucking can't read. Shit. But, yeah, that's been fun as well. So that I've got two books in that series, and the third one's coming out next year, probably May, June next year.
Yep. Where do you find the time to write?
I write about 500 words each of my days off, and I try and make sure 500 to 1,000. I make sure I do that each of my days off, whether I want to or not. I just force myself to do it, and
it must keep you up at night. Some chronic, like, just shit running through your head, and what can I do for this? And yeah.
But fucking, like I said, it keeps me semi-sane, so that's the main thing.
It's a good way to express yourself. I express myself through singing. So I got a karaoke and belled out a tune or two. And
give us a song.
Yeah. I love it. So
no, give us a song now.
Sorry?
Give us a song.
Oh, no. Don't even. Actually, go onto my YouTube. I sing, what was it, Enter Sandman. There you go. Right. There's one on my YouTube channel.
All right, mate.
Yeah. So go and have a look at that. I was at a party one night, and the guy's daughter had some friends over, and she was talking about music and heavy metal and all this other stuff. And I said, I went to the Metallica concert. And she's like, oh, wow, yeah. And I said, I recorded it live. And I said, listen to this. So I stuck it on. And it was the clip on my YouTube channel. And I said, what do you think of that? And I said, they're really good live, eh? And she's like, yeah, that's really cool. I went, no, it's me. And she's like, oh, fuck off. So she thought it was all right.
Good on you, man.
Good stuff.
Fuck yeah, good on you, man. That's cool.
Yeah, I love it, man. We all have to vent sometimes, and usually singing something that you can yell into a microphone at people is a good start. So
without getting in trouble.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it depends how good you sing it, I suppose. I went out on last Thursday night and for Halloween, and there was a guy there dressed as a Viking. And he was singing Slipknot and shit, and it was like, fuck, and he wasn't too bad at it too. He was pretty good, so I was stoked with that. Yeah, oh, man, cool. Mate, sorry.
Silence song.
Oh, Disturbed, mate. I tried that one night, and I fucking butchered it. It is such a hard song to sing.
Oh, mate, he's
And he actually said, I saw an interview with him, and he said that it was one of the most challenging songs he's ever sung. Mm. I think it actually brought the band back together, because I think they used to record apart from each other and just send in the music, and then they would just have a sound guy put it all together. But he said, I think that they actually, it was the first time in years that they all got back in the studio together and recorded it. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's what he said in one of his interviews. But he said vocally it was one of the most challenging songs he's ever sung. So, and he did a fantastic job.
He did a magnificent job.
So he's got another one. That was Five Finger Death Punch that did that Offspring song.
Okay. They've done some fucking good songs too, eh?
Oh, Five Finger Death Punch are my favourite. I love how patriotic they are.
Yeah.
Long
Shot of Heaven's a good one.
Yeah, yep, that's a fantastic song. Battleborn, that's another good one. Mm. I just really love, I love heavy metal songs that you can actually understand.
Exactly.
You know, it's not like I'm a big fan of Slipknot, but Five Finger just blow them out of the water in my opinion. So,
I used to listen to Cowboys from Hell when I was younger, and
I never really got into Pantera. I think it was just too. Just two out there.
Yeah. They're a bit shouty for me now.
Yeah.
I'm old fashioned.
don't tell me about being old. Come on. My knees are fucking shot. My back's shot. Oh, it's just horrible.
Just get me a new body. Fuck.
Yeah. But my beard's not grey yet, so that's a bonus.
Fucking awesome beard there, man. You could be a Viking.
Yeah, man. Well, I actually trimmed it today. Like, I went and got I got a haircut just for you, man. And and I got home and I was like, fuck, this thing is wispy as shit. Like, it was out to here, and it was probably, I've cut a good 2 inches off it actually. And because it was just really thin down the bottom, and I was wearing my singlet and I went, just where that singlet line goes, that's where it starts to get wispy. So I was just got the clippers and just went around my neckline of a singlet, and it worked out well. Yeah. So it looks a lot fuller now, so which is really good.
Better than my beard, mate. Mine's like 5 o'clock shadow.
You'll hit puberty one day, mate. You'll be right.
Yeah. I've all done and dropped yet, so I'll let you know when they do.
You can keep some stuff to yourself.
No, you need to know too, mate.
Oh, mate, this has been really good.
Thanks for having me on, mate.
Mate, thanks for contacting me, man. I love talking about this stuff, and you know, it doesn't necessarily matter what sort of time you had. It's your experience, and I'm glad you wanted to share that. And you know, even promoting your books and whatnot, that's great, because you know, why not? It's something that you've found solace in doing, and it keeps you sane, helps keep you sane, do you think that's one of your coping mechanisms?
Probably is, eh? Like, subconsciously, I'm not aware of it, but more than likely is, eh?
Well, it's therapeutic to you, so, you know, I mean, Bram Connolly, he's an author as well, so I don't know if it's the same for him.
And so Shauno, by the way, I forgot to mention that.
Oh, Sean Barry. He's the top dude, man. I fucking love that guy. He walked into my house and gave me a hug. I was going to shake his hand and he goes, no, give me a hug. And I'm like, fuck yeah, all right, I'll give you a hug. Oh, he was just smiles the whole way through, man. It was fucking great.
My first time I met him, I put my hand up to go and help fill sandbags on
Right.
And the first, I didn't know where the fucking set was. So I'm parked by the side of the road on the phone to him, and he goes, yep, I'm just coming around the corner. And my first fucking meeting with him, he had his hand out the window, and he's going, and his fucking Hummer, his black Hummer, and he drives into the fucking set. I just followed him in. Top life, man.
Oh, mate. Yeah, he's great, man. Yeah. Yep. Fucking hell. I've got to get Big Mike on here.
Yeah.
Fucking the maladjusted monkeys, they beat me to it, the little bastards. I'm watching you guys. But I don't know if you listened to their episode, but it was a really good episode. So have you listened to their podcast yet?
Not yet, no.
Yeah, look it up, maladjusted monkeys. I had those lads on a little while back, and they're good guys, so I wasn't too upset that they got to him first.
Man, I love the fact that Mike's created an app that's working.
Mate, same. Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, people might, there's few people shit on it, you know, like you're always going to have that, those people, you know, there's, yeah. I mean, that could be it. I mean, there were some issues with some people not knowing how secure it was, because it gives out semi-location, like your postcode or whatever, or anything like that. But anyone that's using a smartphone, mate, can be tracked anywhere, let's face it. So, yeah. But that's something that we'll go through when I get him on. So, but really, really highly recommend going over to the Maladjusted Monkeys, listening to their episode with Mike, because it was absolutely fantastic. So,
yeah, well,
I'll get a squeeze. Yeah, no, really good guys. Yeah, Tommy and Shane, characters. Yeah, really good.
Like he's doing more than the fucking government is. Like
there was, and the fact that it's self-funded, like it's just incredible. Blows my mind that the passion. You know, I wish I had that kind of passion for this, but. Because he's working full time, you know, and he's just putting everything he's got into this thing, eh? And I'm just like, it must be so exhausting. And like, we went over to Bali, and I remember seeing something like, why is he holidaying? Like, is he holidaying on people's money? And no, he's not. He needs a fucking break. This guy just needs to be with his family for a little bit. Like, he needs time off. And two, it's not your money. Like, he's not making, like, money out of this hand over fist, you know? So, yeah. No, he's a top bloke, man, and he's doing fantastic work.
Yeah. But you know, you're doing your thing too, man. Like, don't sell yourself short and don't put yourself down. Like, you're doing your podcast. You're getting out there. You're doing what you love to do as well. So,
Yeah, I want to get back into my review videos because I don't know what it is, but in the last probably month and a half, 2 months, my YouTube's been getting hit quite a bit. Like, people commenting on old posts or old videos and all that sort of stuff, and mainly the Rush 12 backpack review that I did. That's getting a lot of hits. I think that's my most popular video at the moment, actually.
Oh, cool.
But it's actually really fun doing those sort of things, but I just struggle to find the time. So, I've just got to work out a system, I reckon. And I've got my whiteboard, so I might lay something out and see how it works.
I think with everything you need a system just to remain focused on track, eh?
Yeah, because I'm fucking useless at it. I really am. I'm so fucking stupid.
I am too.
Ugh, fuck, it's just like the amount of times that I walk out the door to go to work and then I pull back in the driveway because I've forgotten something. Well, it's like a fucking daily occurrence, and I'm like... I'll see it sitting there, and I'm like, okay, I'll just go and brush my teeth before I leave, and then pick that up on the way out, go brush my teeth, and then fucking walk out the door without it. Like, it's just stupid shit, you know, like, yeah.
I think we're all the same, mate, eh?
Yeah, to an extent, yeah, but I don't know, I'm fucking useless.
Stop that, no, you're not.
Yeah, all right, man, fucking... Thank you very much for contacting me and sharing with us, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, Alex.
It's got me back in the mood to do to go out and
sing some and more start canvassing.
Metallica. Yeah, yeah,
I'll
that's it,
that, man. I'll watch it.
Yeah, go and have a gander. It's a bit of a laugh. So, yeah, it's nowhere near perfect. Man.
They're getting a bit fucking old in the tooth now, though, eh? Have you seen some recent photos of him?
Well, he actually cancelled his last Australian tour because he's in rehab.
Yeah.
You know, which is a shame.
Yeah.
But, I mean, apparently he's always dealt with, suffered from addiction, so... And, unfortunately, it's just affected the Australian tour, so... everyone got a refund. I don't know if everyone's got their money, because I saw some posts the other day asking if... everyone had got their refund because someone didn't, but I'm sure it'll filter through.
Yeah.
You know, but... Oh, that,
it probably has nothing to do with Metallica, though. It's probably the...
Yeah, it's probably Ticket Tech or whoever's booking it.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
That sucks, though, but yeah. They're getting on.
Yeah, man, the fucking... I mean, well, you look at AC/DC. Is Brian Johnson back?
I'm not sure. I know old mate died, didn't he? Who is the lead singer? I'm not a massive fan of AC/DC, sorry.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. This interview's fucking done. No. Angus Young. No, he's lead guitarist. No, he's still going.
No, his brother died, didn't he?
His brother? Was his brother the drummer?
Who was the lead singer?
The lead singer was Bon Scott. He died years and years and years ago. Yeah. And then Brian Johnson come in. And then Brian Johnson had hearing issues, so he couldn't sing. So they got Axl Rose to do a tour with them. And apparently he did really well.
Yeah.
I saw a couple of clips and I thought he was actually pretty good.
As a
fill-in. Yeah. So, which, yeah, that's pretty fucking cool. I mean, Axl Rose and AC/DC, even if for a little while, that's pretty fucking cool.
I never thought that Metallica would go with the, you ever listen to S&M?
Yes, I fucking love that album.
I didn't think it would work, and it fucking worked so well.
Oh, best album ever, you know? I wasn't a big fan of, of things like Master of Puppets and all the real heavy, fast stuff. I was more of a Load, Reload sort of person, and the Garage Inc. was good. But S&M, mint. That's the best album they ever did.
It was fucking good.
Yeah.
I should revisit that idea, eh?
Yeah, that'd be mad. I reckon other bands should do that as well. I wonder how Five Finger would go with an orchestra.
Probably really well, mate.
I reckon they'd make it work. Even Disturbed, I reckon, would make it work.
Fucking oath.
Yeah.
Great bands, man.
Yeah, man. What are your plans for now? Well, what are your plans going forth?
My plans going forward are... I'm starting next year. I'm starting a degree in social work.
Okay.
Fucking nervous, man. I haven't started at uni before. Especially as a 41-year-old. So I'll give that a crack. And it's part-time, so it'll take 6 years. But my idea is to try and get into helping veterans out at some point. I don't think it's necessarily being done particularly well. So I want to try and get in somehow. I don't even know if I can as a social worker, but I want to try. So I'll move sideways out of the ambulance into social work and just see if I can help out the veteran community somehow in that field.
Yep. So no, that's awesome.
Nervous and excited, but that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got that drive there, so I don't think... Well, I mean, you've been through the military, so you've got all that training against you. You've got... Well, for you. You've got... ambulance training. There's no reason why you couldn't do it. Look, it might come across as a bit daunting, mate, but you've definitely got the goods to do it. I mean, look what you've already achieved. So I don't think you're going to have any issues, mate.
Yeah, thanks, man. I'll give it a red hot crack anyway.
Yeah, and that's all you can do, man. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I've got to get this fucking shit sorted out with canvassing and whatnot and getting more people on, because I really do enjoy doing this and talking to people and getting stories out there. I mean, I didn't buy all this fucking equipment for nothing, and I really do enjoy it.
I'll try and share. I'll definitely share this, and when I see others, I'll share it as well. For what it's worth, it might not help at all, but every little bit's worth something, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm just really glad that people are starting to reach out and ask me about it. I've actually I've got an interview coming up that I'm really excited about. We've just got to line up times. Yep. I'm going to give up my Saturday morning. I'm going to suggest that they come over on Saturday morning, because it's just really hard for these guys to get through on a weeknight, because there's three of them and they're in three different locations. So, so it's a little bit tough, but I should I tell you a bit of a spoiler? Yeah, bugger it, why not? Some of the guys from Brothers United.
Oh, fucking awesome.
Yeah, so Thumper's going to come on with a couple of mates and discuss that. So we just got to line up the times. I'm going to actually contact them after this and get into it. So that'll be a really good episode, I think.
That's awesome, Ellis.
Yeah.
Well done, man.
Another one that I want to get on is Willie. Matt Williams, Willie beating cancer.
Oh, sorry, no.
Don't follow that one. He's ex-military. Well, sorry, current military. He's still in the military, and he's got a brain tumor.
Oh shit.
Yeah, and at the moment it's inoperable. So he's another one that I want to get on, but he's extremely busy. Like fucking flat out, this guy. He's an absolute legend. So
what's his does he have like a Facebook page or something?
So it's Willie Beating Cancer.
I'll jump on a follow him, man. I hadn't heard that one before, but
yeah, no, he's fucking awesome. I think he's in Adelaide. Don't quote me on that. I think he's in somewhere down south.
Are they using like radiotherapy or chemo or anything like
he's
that?
He's done chemo. I don't know the full story, but I know he's done chemo and his tumor's not growing, which is a good sign.
Yeah.
So, it's complicated. I'm probably not qualified enough to say or up to date enough to really say much. But actually, recently Instagram fucked up and deleted his account. Which has got his whole history on there, from when he fucking started, which is devastating, because there were about four or five different people mimicking him, and then they put reports in against him to say that he was fake, and they fucking deleted his account. Dumb cunts. So, mate, he's fucking devoed about that, and you fucking would be too, because it's got his whole fucking journey on there. From start to current, and that happened a couple of weeks ago, I think.
I have to admit, I fucked up last night, eh?
Oh, what'd you do?
I had a mate who I was in Afghanistan with. He was a medic.
Yeah.
And he forgot his password. So out of the blue, I get this fucking friend request on Facebook from him. I thought, what the fuck? He's already a fucking friend. Is this a hacker account? So I just asked him, where did we serve together? And he replied, Suai, East Timor. It was actually Afghanistan. I thought, he's a hacker. Reported. It was actually fucking him.
No.
So I've contacted Facebook and I just said, look, I fucked up. This person's genuine. And, dickhead. So hopefully they reinstate it. But
oh, so they actually deleted his account?
They haven't deleted it. They're pending an investigation.
So. Oh, right. Okay.
Dumb bastard. I won't hear the last of that.
Who needs enemies, mate?
Yeah.
But if the worst thing that happens to you is you get your fucking Facebook deleted, that's first world problems right there.
Well, that's true.
Probably you'll be better off without it, to be honest. Fucking social media, holy shit. If you listen to our episode of Smack, Talking Smack,
no.
Oh, fuck. That gets pretty loose about social media. Yeah, go and have a listen to that one. me and a couple of mates, and I had three guys over here, two Kiwi fellas, two black fellas, and there were two white fellas, and the other white fella, because I'm the other one, and he goes, yeah, and then the other white fella said, so we're a half-half panel here, so racism is not possible. And I was like, fuck, this is not going to go down well.
And we're
in the gutter. But these two fucking give it as much as they get it, so.
Yeah,
That was good. Fucking great episode. Yeah. I'm surprised I haven't been kicked off the fucking internet yet.
It's all good, man.
Yeah. All right,
social
mate.
Social media is a fucking...
Who's this?
Social media is just a
fucking... Oh, mate, it's a fucking... There's so much fuckery on there that...
Oh, there's you know, so much hurdy-hurdy feelings. Or,
yeah. Or yeah, there's just too much superficial shit on there as well. Like, I mean, you look at these chicks on Instagram and stuff and... They're just trophies. They treat themselves like fucking trophies. And I'm not into it, eh? So not into it, you know?
You seen that meme, or mem, whatever you fucking
have. Memes.
And it's a chick, a social media chick, and she goes, I'm a model. And he goes, oh, wow, really? Who do you work for? And she goes, oh, no, on Instagram.
Yeah.
And his reply is, oh, I'm a sniper.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really? Are you in the army? And he goes, no, I'm Call of Duty.
Yeah. So fucking true. Oh, keyboard warriors.
That's it.
I saw a video on this dickhead. He's like, I think someone might have been cracking onto his missus. God knows how he fucking got one in the first place. But he's like, you know, fucking names, or he just rattles off all these fucking, these first-person shooter games. And he's like, these are highly simulated games and have trained me to be able to kill motherfuckers like you. And I'm just like, what the fuck? At what stage in your life do you think that's training? Oh, shit.
I bet you he's SAS, Delta, Navy SEAL.
Yeah, like yeah, that. He fucking, you know.
And that's on his days off, fuck.
Yeah, days off. He's got every day off this cunt living in his fucking mum's basement.
we're paying for it. Fuck,
yeah, eating fucking peanut dummies? Butter sandwiches. Fucking hell. Jesus, some retards out there. Like I used to do paintball, you know, and I think that prepared me zero for fucking any sort of conflict. Yeah, shit. Some delusional people out there, eh?
What a stupid thing to say, yeah.
Fucking idiots.
I've got to get cracking, mate, but thank you so much for having me on, eh?
Mate, it's been a pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Glad to have you on. Spread the word if you know anybody else that wants to come on.
I don't know, you might be part of it, but there's a Facebook group called Facebook Military Veteran Entrepreneurs, Business Owners and Entrepreneurs or something.
Can you send me a link for that?
I will, mate.
Yeah.
And I can share on there as well, this podcast on there, and then ask if anyone's interested to reach out to you.
Absolutely. Yep, yeah, absolutely. Okay. That'd be fantastic.
Right. Sweet as, mate.
I'm going to get on my whiteboard and start fucking putting down names to contact.
Yeah, fucking oath.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. So I need to get this thing cranking.
I'll try my best to help spread the word, mate.
Yeah, man. For sure. All right, buddy.
All right, mate. Enjoy your Colorado.
Oh, Will, man. I picked it up yesterday. I am absolutely loving it.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. No, it's great. Yeah. So stoked.
Bloody good car. That's it.
Yeah. People are going to shit on it, but people are going to shit on every car. You know, there's diehards out there, and I'm like, as long as you treat it well, it'll treat you well.
Yeah.
That's my thought.
Some people whinge for the sake of fucking whinging.
Yeah, like, oh, I was brought up on Ford. But realistically, I don't give a fuck as long as it gets me from A to B.
A to B, exactly.
And like safe. That. Like, it's a lot safer than what I had. Fuck, that thing drove like a boat. it was terrible, eh? Oh, shit. And the guy that sold me the car bought it off me for $1,000, and I was like, holy shit. I said, it's got like fucking, 7 months rego on it as well. And I'm like, I was just going to give it away. The plan was to start a GoFundMe and get it fixed up and then give it to someone. But it would have cost more to fix up than what he paid for it.
Yeah.
You know, so fucking, I could use the money as well, to be honest. So, you know. Now that I've got a fucking loan for this thing. So, yeah. All right, mate, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for coming on. Spread the word.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's been fantastic.
I've enjoyed it, man. It's been awesome.
Yeah, it's been absolutely magic. So, Keith, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it, mate. Have a good day, eh?
You too.